Dear Sugar is supported by
So, Cheryl, some years ago I was asked to submit an essay on fairy tales, something I knew absolutely nothing about. And in the course of that, I did a bunch of research. And one of the things that I uncovered that I just hadn't thought about at all was kind of the unique history of how stepmothers are portrayed. Mm. There's a long tradition, as we know, in fairy tales of the wicked stepmother. It's just an archetype. And that arises actually from very particular economic and familial dynamics in the Middle Ages. Basically, if there was a stepmother who came into a family, she was suddenly competing with the children economically for the inheritance with the children of the husband. And really, what was so interesting in thinking about it is, okay, but that's medieval times. Why is it that this archetype of the wicked stepmother somehow still exists in our culture? And it's partly because we keep recycling these fairy tales, but it's also, I think, because the idealization of the mother figure is one of the persistent myths that we've been unable to cleave ourselves from. Mm-hmm. And it's only become more extreme in a sense because, as we've discussed and hear in so many letters, mothers of all sorts hold themselves to an impossible standard. I feel like that modern myth is colliding with that longer-standing traditional myth of the stepmother as an inherently suspect, morally suspect figure. And today, that's what we're going to talk about, step monsters.
Right. But really, also, I mean, I think the dynamic I've observed in fairy tales, you know, being a motherless daughter, I'm attuned to this particular aspect of the narrative, which is there really is no more vulnerable a figure as a motherless child. Okay, because the mother is the primal, essential protector and provider of unconditional love. And then we have, in fairy tales at least, the stepmother, who, if she gives love, it's at least for a while conditional. Mm-hmm. It's more complicated. Of course, we've talked on this show about, you know, mothers who say they don't like being mothers or whatnot, but most mothers have the experience that they love that child from the moment he or she is born. And stepmothers don't have that kind of innate bond with those kids. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited. We're going to be digging into this question on this episode today. We're going to have a really interesting guest speak to us as well. So why don't we get started? Will you read us the first letter?
I will. Dear Sugars, this is something I've been struggling with for a while now, and it's awful to write it to another person, but I have to. I'm a stepmother, and I hate it. The advice I get from everyone is that I knew what I was getting into when I got married, so I should accept it, but I didn't anticipate things being the way they are. I thought I was mature enough to handle being a stepmother, but maybe I'm just a total monster. That's what you are if you don't love your stepchildren like your own. I met my husband when we were in high school, and even then we fell for each other. However, before we graduated, we had a fight, and I went off to college with our relationship unresolved. We didn't talk for 8 years, aside from a few token conversations. During that time, he had 2 children with another woman. 2 years ago, we reconnected online, and all those feelings were still there, and we began a relationship. At the time, I was hopeful about being a stepmother and sure that I could be a good one. So when we moved in together last spring, I jumped in with both feet. They were 5 and 2 when I met them 3 years ago and fairly easy to deal with. Now they are 8 and 5, and I'm overwhelmed with how annoying they are. I face pressure from all sides to be their mom, and I'm not. They have a mother, even if she's not around as much as she should be. To complicate matters, I gave birth to my own daughter in June, and I didn't anticipate how fierce my feelings about her would be. My desire to protect her is so strong. I don't want the other children to touch her, and a terrible feeling fills my chest when I see this. I can't stand it. I know this is wrong. I am open with my husband about my struggle, but I know it hurts him that I don't have a wonderful mom-like relationship with them. I know I'm supposed to treat all the children in the house exactly the same, but I'm finding this impossible. They're not babies, and they're not my babies. They're just not. I try to be present with them for my husband because I love him more than the world, but I never thought it would be so hard. We have a weird home life now because he thinks he needs to keep them mainly separate from me. I try to suggest spending time with each other, but he doesn't want me to be unhappy. I don't know what to do. I know my feelings are not the right ones for this situation, and I'm not the cuddly woman his kids desire. I know these children have been hurt before and need a loving home environment. I'm trying, but I'm failing. I don't want to be their mother. I want to be my daughter's mother. I don't want them to call me mom, and I know I'm supposed to. When the kids are elsewhere, I get glimpses of the life I could have had if my husband and I had just gotten together sooner, but it's the ship that didn't carry us. I know this, but I want it. I grieve for it. I know that the only possible answer is that I should have known what I was doing when I married my husband, but not marrying him was too much to bear, and our daughter is so precious to me. I know his kids are precious to him, and I try to look at our life through this lens, but it's so difficult, and I know I am so awful. I try my best to be kind, and sometimes we have good moments, but most times I just want this season of life to be over. I hope things will improve, and I know that it's up to me as the adult, but what if I can't hack it? What if I am just the evil stepmother? I don't like feeling embattled in my own home. I don't like being such a monster. I don't like feeling so much pressure from everyone to be a saint and to love them like my own. That may never happen. I don't feel it. I'm supposed to, but I don't feel it. I know it's not right. I know it's not. I know. Signed, The Wicked Stepmother.
This is a really hard letter.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's one of the bravest letters we've ever gotten.
Yeah.
I think it is so extraordinarily rare for a stepmother especially, you know, she's stepping into this role to say, I am having these terrible feelings that are conforming to every stereotype, but I'm having them.
I agree with you. She's so brave. And I also love that she doesn't put her feelings on anyone else. She's not blaming the kids for her feelings. She's not saying, well, I would love them, but they do this and then they do that. And how can I love them? She's saying, I know I should feel this way and I do not.
Yeah.
And I think that it's really important for the purposes of our conversation that we're going to just take this idea off the table that Wicked Stepmother should be doing anything. What this conversation is about, Wicked Stepmother, is what you're feeling,
right,
what moment you're in your life right now. And I do want to remind you and our listeners as well that this is a moment. This is a snapshot of not just any moment, but a really powerful and powerfully stressful one. She says here, we moved in together last spring. Okay, she's known the kids for 3 years, ever since she's been involved with her husband.
Right.
It's different to know a couple of kids and to have them move into your house.
Right.
So they all moved in together last spring. Then she says, I gave birth to my daughter in June. June is the month that spring turns to summer. Okay?
Yeah.
So within the span of one season, she has become the stepmother to two children in a way that she hadn't before. You know, before that, she was basically their dad's girlfriend.
Right.
Now she's the stepmother. And also, she has become a mother. And I know from experience, but we know this just from a biological standpoint, when you give birth to a baby, you have all kinds of hormonal changes that are about falling madly in love with your child.
Right.
And a huge piece of that is that deep animal urge to protect your child.
Right.
I have so many friends who have the beloved dogs or the beloved cats, and they bring the baby home, and they're like, don't touch the baby. You know,
older
get
siblings.
Away from the baby. And the older siblings, don't touch the baby. So this, I just want to say, Wicked Stepmother, this feeling you have isn't an indication that you're a terrible person. You won't always feel this way about your daughter. You'll always love her. You'll always want to protect her. But right now, those feelings are heightened.
Yeah.
You know, before we dig into these issues, Steve, I feel like we should call our guest. Dr.
Okay.
Wednesday Martin is going to be joining us today. She's a social researcher and the author of the best-selling book, Step Monster, A New Look at Why Real Stepmothers Think, Feel, and Act the Way We Do.
And we should add that Wednesday is herself a stepmother.
Hello.
Hello, Dr. Martin?
Yes, you can call me Wednesday.
Wednesday. Hi, this is Cheryl Strayed. So listen, we are so thrilled to have you on the show to help us with really these complicated questions. Neither one of us is a stepmother or has a stepmother.
Okay. Well, it's so cool that you guys are doing something to help these people because, you know, it's very taboo.
Yeah. Well, that's it. We just read, before we called you up, we read the letter from The Wicked Stepmother. So we're discussing that letter now. And that was one of the things that we both noted is, you know, this woman, we thought she was so brave for really being so honest about things that are taboo.
Yeah.
Pretty fearless and honest letter, don't you think?
I think it's really fearless and honest. And the reason I called my book Step Monster is because so many women who loved themselves and their lives in every other way, when it came to stepmothering, just they felt monstrous and they felt like failures. These super competent, happy, well-adjusted women were just flummoxed and floored by all these taboo feelings that they had. And the truth is, you know, the role is a bit of a setup, but you can really come to enjoy it. I mean, I had an experience that started out really, really bad, and 15 years later, it's really good.
So what was your experience? Yeah. How did you become a stepmother?
I married a man who had an adolescent daughter and a young teen daughter. I didn't know that statistically the worst case scenario is when a man has teenage girls, that is most predictive of failure for the stepmother and for, you know, hard feelings and difficult adjustment. I didn't even know that. But, you know, it all really depends on where these kids are developmentally, their personality, the family culture they grew up in. And it also hinges a lot on feeling like their other parent, in this case their mom, is giving them either tacitly or really explicitly, like giving them permission to like you. They need that. Even if they're 45 years old, they're going to need their mom to say to them, hey, you know what? Yes, Daddy and I got divorced. Yes, I'm a little bit upset that he's with Cheryl. But guess what? I can hold my own feelings.
Right.
It would be cool if you would give Cheryl a chance.
That's right. I think I should be given a lot of chances.
I should be. You know, but what I'm saying is, if the mom is willing to give the child permission, that changes everything. And those are the happy outcomes. However, it's very rare in our society that a woman will do that, because we grow up with this paradigm of possessive motherhood. You know, in some places in the Caribbean, they believe that a child has many mothers, and in some places in West Africa. And they have sayings about it, and they practice it, and they really do believe that it takes a village. Here, that's just a bumper sticker.
Right.
You know, here we really believe that it's one woman raising her kid, and she's the mom, and that is magical and, you know, sacred. And there's a part of me, I'm a mom, I believe that. But I also see how it sets us up for failure with divorce and repartnership or remarriage, because it means that other woman just automatically seems so threatening.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're not sexually jealous of her and you're done with your ex-husband, she seems threatening because of her proximity to your kid and because your kid is not supposed to have more than one maternal figure. So if the mom won't give you permission and her kid permission to have a relationship with you, you can work on it on your end with your husband or partner.
Yeah, so one of the things that you described, and obviously you've done a lot of research about the age of the kids, where they are developmentally. Cheryl and I were talking before we got on the phone about the very kind of precarious situation that the wicked stepmother finds herself in. What could you say to her about the situation that she finds herself in with two older stepchildren and a new little baby?
Here's what I can say. First of all, she says, I'm a stepmother and I hate it. I feel like a step monster. I hate myself for failing. And the first thing I want to say to this woman is, honey, join the club. Door is open. Come on in. Sit down. Here's your membership card. Now look around. We're all here with you. There was not one woman out of the dozens that I interviewed formally and the 100 or so women that I spoke to casually about being stepmothers who said to me, I got this.
Right.
This is easy.
Hmm. Right.
No problem. We have no problems. If anybody said that, within 15 minutes, we were getting to the nitty-gritty, which always involved resentment, anxiety, feelings of failure. And all those things, the research tells us, come from living in a should culture when it comes to stepmothering. Stepmothers should feel like these are their own children. They should love them like they're their own. They should be able to extend their feeling of love for their husband or partner to these kids. They should rise above. They should know what they're getting into. enough of the shoulds. And here's a really important thing for her to understand. People will tell you that you should love them like they're your own, and maybe you will, but maybe you won't. Right. And one of the most harmful things that happens to stepmothers is they confront a lot of myths. And one of them is, you know, the myth that stepchildren and children are the same, and if you don't feel the same way about them, you're bad. Anybody who has a child and is with that child, you know, from childbirth or, you know, earliest adoption or fosterage, knows that there's something very special about the bond that builds up over time. Attachment is a suite of behaviors that unfolds between a caregiver, you know, and a dependent offspring, and it's really deep and meaningful. It's in our neurocircuitry. It's rich. It's rewarding. Let's be honest. We don't always have the luxury of getting that with our stepchildren.
In fact, we rarely do.
We rarely do.
Right.
So it's different. And don't let anybody tell you that it shouldn't be or that you're bad for feeling it's different. The other point, guess what? This child has two parents. Your baby needs you. And it is okay to withdraw a little bit, prioritize your baby, feel like you want to circle the wagons a little bit. That doesn't make you a bad stepmother. You're giving your stepchild space with her father, and you're giving yourself time that you really need with your baby. Doing that doesn't mean that you're not going to be able to feel more knit together eventually. Mm-hmm. But right now, you know, when there's a newborn or a baby on the scene, many, many women describe feeling newly sort of possessive and private. And then they pathologize themselves for it. Don't. Mm-hmm. Don't even.
That's great. So I think that's phenomenal, Wednesday. I think that's exactly what the wicked stepmother needs to hear. And one of the interesting paradoxes of that, when you forgive yourself, right, for having those feelings you have, what that opens up is the possibility that you will over time come to love these stepchildren. And so my question for you is, you know, when I read this letter, I agree with you, we need to get rid of the shoulds. I also do think about these stepkids in this situation. I'm sure the wicked stepmother, the woman who signs herself the wicked stepmother, wants to have a happy family. And the fact of the matter is, it does include these stepkids. What would you say to her about how to build that in a way in which she's not condemning herself or shaming herself? How to build that with this blended family?
I love the question. The way to do it is to know that there's not one right way to do it. I really believed when I became a stepmother that I was supposed to refer to my stepdaughters as my daughters.
Mm-hmm.
And one time was very early on. My older stepdaughter was staying with us for the weekend, and I was just recently married to my husband, and a friend of mine called from out of town, and she said, "What are you doing this weekend?" And my stepdaughter was standing there, and I went through this thing in my head where I was like, what am I supposed to call her? And in sociology, you call that role ambiguity.
Yeah.
Like, who am I to her, and what is she to me, and how will she feel about how I describe it? That's role ambiguity. So I was like a deer caught in the headlights of role ambiguity, and I was like, what am I supposed to say? And I said, my daughter's in town. And my friend on the other line is like, what? Thinking, of course, in her head, thinking like, what happened? Was there a surrogate mom in the picture I didn't know about? Or like, you know, was there an adoption in the works I didn't know about? And I said it like three times because, of course, my friend didn't know what I was talking about. So I repeated like three times that my daughter was in town. And my lovely, gracious stepdaughter just stood there, her face getting redder and redder, cringing because it was such an overstep, made her feel so weird, was so disrespectful to her mom. And I was cringing because my friend did not know what the hell I was talking about. I sounded like a crazy person, and I felt fake.
Right.
This is a bad way to build a relationship, and I was doing it because of shoulds. Now, what I learned after doing the research and talking to all these stepmothers and all these experts is there's not one right way to do it. Some stepfamilies are going to be great with being polite, being civil, you know, respecting your differences and understanding that you might never be best buds or even buds, but you can appreciate that this person is taking care of your dad. You can appreciate, as a stepmother, that, you know, your husband's child makes him feel joyous, even if she doesn't always make you feel that way. Mm-hmm. Then there are some step families, they are extremely rare, that are very, very close. And that's the exception. It's not the rule. And if you have it, just feel lucky.
Yeah.
Don't feel superior to other people. Don't rub it in their faces. But don't think that people who seem to have a perfect step-family life do, first of all. And, you know, if their step-family relations are closer than yours with your stepkids, it's usually about factors beyond your control.
Right. It's so interesting. I think there is a sense, an undercurrent to the letter, that the biological mom was damaging or hurtful to the kids.
Yes.
And there might be a sense in which she sort of feels like she has to step in as a saint immediately sort of undo the damage the biological mom did.
Oh, absolutely. And here's the other tricky situation for her. Some of the research suggests that when a child's mother is more absent, less loving and engaged, even if the child's mother is abusive, and the child has a stepmother. In many cases, if the stepmother is loving, it will incite resentment and feelings of disloyalty in the child because they know that their mother is imperfect. So it's a very complicated dance with a kid whose mother is absent or, you know, hopefully this isn't the case, but abusive. But what we can say is, even if mom is dead, even if mom is a drug addict, even if mom is, you know, emotionally cut off, children still feel that their relationship with their mom is something sacrosanct, and they don't want that territory stepped on.
Mm-hmm.
So it won't be good for the stepmom or the child for her to tread too hard in mommy territory.
Right.
She has to find that balance, and it's tricky. Now, thankfully, this child has a present loving parent, and that's dad. And especially while there's a baby in the picture, dad can pick up the slack and just work on and nurture and make even better every day his relationship with his child.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes the pressure off her.
Yeah.
And then she can reset her expectations, and the guilt will lessen.
Right.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's something to be said Wednesday about talking with dad about this, because one of the things that's striking is that he's clearly picking up on her resentment of her stepchildren, and especially, you know, her not wanting them to touch the baby. And that's caused him to sort of try to keep the kids sequestered, the stepchildren, his children,
right,
biological children, sequestered from her. So it feels like he's got to be a part of that process as well.
Yeah. Now, that's such a great point. And here's something we know about the difference between first families and stepfamilies. Oh, this is the other, you know, BS that these families have to deal with, is the expectation that in order for a stepfamily to be successful and happy, it's supposed to look, feel, and act like a first family. Absolutely, 100% not the case, we know from the research. We know from the research that first families bond really well as a group. They bond really well when they're all having dinner together, playing a sport together, doing a puzzle together. Guess how step families bond best? Dyadically, one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
So when the stepkids are there, what therapists will tell you, based on what works, is let dad have time with his child. Then you have some one-on-one time with your husband's child. Don't try to do this thing where everybody's sitting down and having a family dinner every second of every day. Do you know why? Well, first of all, you get fat. But second of all, because for stepfamilies, all together now activities activate anxiety about who's on the inside.
Mm.
and who's on the outside.
Right.
So until you get your sea legs, and you need to get your sea legs over and over. You need to get your sea legs again in the stepfamily when you have a baby. You need to get your sea legs again in the stepfamily when your stepchild graduates, when your stepchild marries. These are all moments when stepfamilies have to readjust. So she's in a moment of readjustment. And, you know, it's important to understand that, just to do that resetting and to understand it's not a first family. We're going to bond best one-on-one. So let dad be with his kids, and then let her, one at a time, be with one of the kids without the baby. And do a really low-impact, we call them shoulder-to-shoulder activities. Don't be sitting there eyeball-to-eyeball like, hey, hi, let's relate.
Right.
Do something low-key, side-to-side. Do an arts and craft activity. For crying out loud, you're tired, you have a baby, just sit there and watch TV with the kid and feel that comfort of being side by side.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think that's great advice.
And then I promise that after a bit of that, she's going to feel more comfortable. It'll come to her naturally, like, you know, here, hold the baby for a second.
Well, I think you've offered some really powerful insight, Wednesday. I know, I feel reassured listening to you. I mean, I think that this is a complicated relationship, and that it's a relationship that's about not a moment.
Yeah.
It's not about that initial rush that you, first moment you see your baby, you bond and love that child, but it's a relationship that develops over time as, you know, the years pass.
It's a process. Step families coalescing into something comfortable can take 7 years. It's a journey, and it takes time, and the kids change, and she'll change, and they'll find themselves in different places. They'll be closer. They'll be further apart. It's really normal. There's not one thing she's written in this letter that I haven't heard many times, including this sense that she's just freakishly unique and terrible.
Right.
Well, and I want to say, too, you know, she signs her letter, The Wicked Stepmother, you know, like the terrible, terrible stepmother in Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Okay.
Yes.
And this is a woman who, you know, like tries to murder Snow White.
Right? Yes.
And I really think, Wicked Stepmother, if you're out there listening, I know that that evil woman would never have composed a letter to Dear Sugar Radio asking
no,
for help. She just
she wouldn't have bothered.
Just put the poison in the apple, and she was done with that. And so I think that by even asking these questions and admitting to these feelings that are so taboo, it tells us that you're not so wicked after all.
Yeah.
I agree.
Now let's move on to the next letter. We have a really interesting letter from a mother whose children also have a stepmother. I'll read the letter. Dear Sugars, I'm a single mom of two daughters, ages 5 and 8. I've been divorced for more than 4 years. My ex-husband, who's the father of our two girls, lives with his wife about a half hour away from the house where I live with our daughters. I get along pretty well with my ex-husband, despite the fact that he took up with his current wife while we were still married. Their relationship is the primary reason we divorced. I don't see myself as someone who is overly sensitive or who is easily offended or hurt, but a few events have occurred recently that do not sit well with me, and I'd love it if you could advise me as to how to proceed with my ex. The first event is about our older daughter's birthday party. She's nearly 9. She recently told me that her father and stepmother were going to throw her a birthday party and invite all her friends from school. Of course, her school is in the town where I live, a half hour away from them. I was very upset when our daughter told me this because I've always been the one to throw her birthday parties. Even when we were married, my ex would not participate in the planning of the parties at all. He'd just show up. My ex and I have joint legal custody of our daughters, but I don't think it's right for him to tell our daughter that he and his wife would be having her birthday party at their house, especially without talking to me first. A second event was at our younger daughter's parent-teacher conference. While at the conference, the teacher said, "How nice of, insert stepmother's name, to volunteer in our classroom." I looked at my ex when she said this, and he was visibly uncomfortable. I'm a bit ill at ease that I wasn't notified that my ex's wife is volunteering in our daughter's classroom. Perhaps a contributing factor to my negative reaction is that my job makes it very difficult for me to take a couple hours off and do that for our daughter. My husband's wife works for my ex-husband, so it isn't a big deal for her to get the time off to do such things. A third and final event that I was troubled by is when I learned from our older daughter a couple of weeks ago that her stepmother had asked her and her sister to call her mom after she married my ex last year. I was very surprised to hear this and could tell that my 8-year-old was picking up on the fact that I didn't care for it. She explained that her stepmother said it was rude in her culture for a child to call an adult by his or her first name. Our daughter then said that she only has to call her mom when they're in front of her family members, but that her stepmother is happy to be called that all the time. I do know that our daughters call her parents grandma and grandpa, too, in their language. Perhaps I'm being overly sensitive, but I feel like the girl's stepmother is overstepping her bounds. I'm a very present mother, and as far as I'm concerned, I'm their only mother. Sometimes I wish my ex's wife would have her own children so she didn't infringe on mine. Am I being petty in my reactions to these events? On the one hand, I don't want to make waves with my ex. On the other hand, I also don't want to be taken advantage of or to be made to feel small. I would greatly appreciate any advice you have for me. Sincerely, Jen.
Mm.
Or...
yeah.
I have to say, I really relate to Jen here. I mean,
I'm
a mom.
Jen. Yeah. I love Jen.
I'm like, you're not going to plan my kid's birthday party, Missy.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah. Jen is dealing with something that we always try to help stepmothers not do.
Mm.
And which stepmothers sometimes do, again, out of guilt, out of trying to disprove this idea that we're Snow White's mother, trying right. to single-handedly dismantle the myth of the wicked stepmother. We bend over backwards to be super involved and super nice, and sometimes we overstep.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we overstep in little ways, like we volunteer in the kids' classroom without saying to our husband, why don't you shoot your ex-wife an email, you know, just so she knows.
Yeah.
Sometimes we overstep in a bigger way by taking a milestone like a birthday and forgetting or neglecting maybe to understand in our excitement to do the right thing just how special and personal this is for the mother and the child. Then there's the really big overstep, which is asking a child who is your stepchild to call you mom or dad. I am not a person who believes in shoulds. I have a background in anthropology. I believe in, you know, looking at things in cultural context. But this is the culture that we live in, and if I were going to issue one of my rare shoulds, it is, Jen, you are not wrong here, and she should not have asked your child to call her mom.
Mm-hmm.
That was a no-no, and if I were going to isolate, you know, one thing from this letter that if I were Jen, I would be talking to my ex-husband about, it would be that.
It would be that.
Now, what if they refuse? What if they just say, no, you know what, we like this? Then we're in territory where we would want to, you know, bring in an expert and sort this out with a person who can have a neutral voice and who can present the facts. A therapist, an article.
Dear Sugar Radio.
Dear Sugar Radio. This is the one thing that I think almost every single family therapist agrees on when they're working with stepfamilies is do not ask a stepchild to call you mom or dad. Just don't. So if Jen's ex-husband is listening, and Jen's ex-husband's wife is listening, please look at the research, please talk to an expert, and think about not what makes you feel good as a couple or what makes you feel good as a person coming from your cultural paradigm, but what is good for this kid and what is good for your stepfamily relationships and for your relationship with this child's mom, who has the power to make your life very happy or very unhappy, stepmom. And so far, Jen is, from as she describes it, like really playing nicely.
Yeah.
So let's not antagonize Jen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, her feelings here seem so measured, and, you know, she's not even really accusing the stepmother of antagonizing her. She really is honest about being made to feel diminished. But I wonder about the line, and I just really am interested in your reaction to it, because it seems to be right at the core of these questions of what is a stepmother. When Jen writes, mm-hmm. I am a very present mother, and as far as I'm concerned, I am their only mother.
Mm-hmm. I was going to read that same sentence, Steve. I'm curious about that Wednesday.
I can't disagree.
No, me either.
You know, I always advise step parents, especially stepmothers, who feel like they have to rush right in and fix things and make everybody love them and love everyone. I always advise them to respect that this is the way motherhood is in our culture, and let's work with what we have here.
Well, let me ask you this, though, sort of in the ideal world, since you've thought about this, you've researched it, and you've even researched it across cultures. Is there a different paradigm that if you had a magic wand, you could sort of bestow onto American family culture? Would it be the idea that, you know, yes, there is a mother and that's a sacred bond, but there's also room for the stepmother, who is not the same as a biological mother, but also a kind of mother?
Yeah, I remember I interviewed a primatologist named Dan Wharton, who studies gorillas. And he talked about how gorillas live in what is very politically incorrectly termed harems. And, you know, he studied what are essentially like sort of stepmother behaviors of these female gorillas toward the offspring, you know, of their mates. And he talked about how there was a whole range of relationships. Some were close to their step offspring and some were not. And he said to me, now, talking about humans, he said, I think the whole problem with stepmother isn't the word step. It's the word mother.
Yeah.
Let's just take it out and invent a relationship that is based on the personalities of the two players, how they like to be together. Let's start with that instead of imposing this mother paradigm. And in terms of waving a magic wand, sure, it would be so great if we didn't live in a culture where there's only one mother, but we do. There's a lot to learn from, you know, Samoan culture, Jamaican culture, where things are different. You know, there's a lot to be learned from that, but you don't learn it by making your stepchild call you mom.
Well, and clearly this family, that's not their family culture either. And Jen, again, I think she's been incredibly gracious and noble.
Right.
I do
she's
too.
Not saying my ex-husband's wife isn't part of my children's lives.
Right.
She's
not saying,
at all.
You know, this woman can be somebody to her daughters, which really, you know, she's giving her all kinds of room to do that. But what she's asking for is to have some boundaries that are held sacred and also to be considered. So
that's right.
We talked about whether they should call her mom or not. That to me is a boundary. The other two things are things that they should be communicating with each other about, like a birthday party. And she didn't say, I oppose the idea of them throwing her a party.
Just
she
communicate says, about it. Yeah.
She says, you know, we need to talk together. And I think that, hey, it might be nice not to have to throw that birthday party every year by yourself. Maybe it is fun if it's at their place and you go
right.
and, you know, that
yes,
you're really
maybe
co-parenting.
Maybe it is, but hey, maybe it's not.
Maybe it's not.
You're suggesting something very reasonable. If you're comfortable, let's do it all together. Guess what that has turned into in the last decade? A pressure on mothers and stepmothers to become besties.
Yeah, another
People
should.
Say, right,
yeah.
So you right, should all do right. holidays together, right? And I say, what are you kidding? Do you think they got divorced because they want to do holidays together? I mean, come on. Like, let's use our noggins and not, like, expect women to be superheroes, which, Cheryl, I know that's not what you were talking about. I just want to address how sometimes this has started to shade over now into this belief that these women should be best pals. There should be absolutely no animosity. Look, there's going to be some animosity, and there are going to be some bumps in the road, and this birthday party is one of them. But as Cheryl has suggested, it's an opportunity for a conversation.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Just an email to say, we were thinking of this. What were you thinking? And then they make a plan. I completely agree with you on that. I'll tell you this right now, and I hope my husband is listening. The last person who's coming to our kids' birthday parties is the next woman he marries.
Okay.
That's the last person who's invited.
Duly noted, Brian.
Over my dead body.
I mean, it does help to be honest about this stuff. You know, like one in 100,000 of these people, they're all going to want to go on vacation together and have a great time, and the girls are going to have girl talk.
Right.
For most of us, you know, we don't want that, and that's okay.
Right. It's the Brady Bunch fantasy to feel like this is how a blended family looks.
Right.
You know?
But really, that guy, Mr. Brady, was doing Alice the whole time.
Oh, that's right.
Why is it that everything has to be dirty? I don't understand it. I'm literally aghast.
Well, it's how some of us are.
So, Wednesday, we would love to hear a time when you think you did really well as a stepmother, a success story, if you will.
Oh, yeah. Okay. This was easy. It wasn't a great achievement. It was a moment when I really loved being a stepmother. One of my stepdaughters, like so many adolescent girls will do, you know, she was staying with us and she came in, you know, from an evening out with friends, bearing the traces of a typical teenage girl night out with her friends, just kind of testing the limits a little bit. You know, there was like an aroma of cigarette smoke maybe, and I believe there might have been a new piercing, or it might have been hair color. You know, I forget the exact details. The pleasure I felt in doing the right thing when she walked in the door and Dad, my husband, nearly hit the roof. The pleasure I took in being the step-parent and just receding and going into my room and reading a fashion magazine and leaving it alone and shutting my mouth, I really got it right. Because then, you know, after he exploded, she came into me, and guess who I got to be? I got to be the person who was like, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know why your dad is so upset that your hair is blue. I don't get it. And I got to be not quite a parent,
right.
Not a peer, just an adult she could come to and tell stuff in a comfortable, authentic
right.
way. And I was being comfortable and authentic. I really didn't care.
Yeah.
I really didn't give a hoot if she dyed her hair blue. I thought it looked good.
Yeah, and you were being an ally to her when she needed one, an
That's
adult
right.
ally. Yeah,
and that is a great description. I have heard some people say that the best thing for a stepmother to try to be is an auntie. I have heard other people say just be an ally. Somewhere on that spectrum between auntie and ally, you know, you're going to be able to find your place, and not only is it going to feel good to you, it's going to feel good to your stepchild, too.
Wonderful. Thank you, Wednesday.
Thanks, you guys, for helping stepmothers and stepfamilies. You rock.
We loved talking to you. Take care.
Take care. Bye, guys.
Bye.
So this brings us to the end of a step episode of Dear Sugar Radio. Dear Sugar Radio is produced by our not wicked
full,
stepmother,
deep,
WBUR.
Primal, loving radio station,
yes,
WBUR.
We're produced and edited by our beautiful stepchild, Lisa Tobin.
our wicked, brilliant Snow White of a producer, Lisa Tobin.
That's right.
To whom I would never in a million years serve a poison apple.
No. We are recording at Talkback Sound and Visual in Portland, Oregon. Josh Millman is our engineer, and you should listen and subscribe to Dear Sugar Radio on iTunes. And write to us at DearSugarRadio@gmail.com. I am so interested to hear, as we always are, what's the reaction? Because step parents, there are millions and millions. And we get the letters in our inbox, and I'll be very interested to hear both of Jen and the Wicked Stepmother and also any other step-parents who are out there, what they made of this episode.